This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, condom ads in primetime and Ted Turner's criticism of the network he built. Joining us from our New York bureau, Kevin Powell, author of Who's Gonna Take the Weight? Manhood, Race, and Power in America. Laura Washington joins us from Chicago. She's a Chicago Sun-Times columnist. And George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. He joins us from NPR in Washington. Folks, one of the things that we wanted to talk about is proposed changes in the Family and Medical Leave Act. This is a law that was instituted in 1993, one that has helped a whole lot of people. But the Department of Labor is expected to come out shortly with proposals revising part of the law, some of which they and other groups have said are too vague and vulnerable to employee abuses. George Curry, when you hear this kind of language, too vague, others translate that into we're tired of paying this kind of money.
Yeah, the Department of Labor, which oversees the Family Leave Act, has the power to make the revision with a public comment. And one of the things they'll be looking at is defining what is serious illness. Some people suggest it should be covering only illnesses of 10 days or more. Got to define what is occasional time off. So it's important how they define it, because you're talking about, I think, between 1999 and 2000, about 24 million Americans who took leave from their jobs. So this is very, very important in terms of how they make these definitions.
Kevin Powell, as we see a generation of people who are living longer, when we see the idea of people now trying to balance the idea of work and family and the importance there, for some, this has to be disappointing, because it is obviously devastating for those who will not any longer be able to, whether it be for a sick child or a sick parent, a sick spouse, take the kind of leave that they've become accustomed to, and that, quite frankly, is needed.
Yeah, I'm really concerned about this. I understand that the Department of Labor is saying they want to fine-tune this thing, but we're talking about a lot of working-class and lower-middle-class Americans who may be in jeopardy of losing their jobs if a family member is sick, if, God forbid, there's some sort of drug addiction and the person needs medical treatment. And I think we really, really need to focus on that public comment process that Mr. Curry talked about, because we can't allow the Labor Department to just do this, make these changes, and there's no kind of public reaction to it, because we're talking about millions of Americans being affected by this.
And Laura Washington, we're also talking about, to a grand degree, this helping a lot of minorities, many of whom do not have insurance, do not have the correct kind of medical coverage that will help bolster the need to attend to a sick relative.
Absolutely. We're talking about not only millions of people being affected, especially in the working class, but that number growing dramatically as we look forward the next 10 or 15 to 20 years because of the baby boomer generation. So we're talking about a dramatic increase in terms of pressure on the system. There's also issues like, as was mentioned earlier, we have a much more flexible workforce now. There's a lot more part-timers. There's a lot more time-sharing going on in the work. There's a lot more people working at home. And all of these issues and all of these trends screams out flexibility. It screams out not seeing these situations so much as exceptions, but rules. And I'm really concerned about the folks at the bottom, particularly the working class, being the most affected here.
Go ahead,
I think,
George.
What's so important here is that we're talking about, and we have this in increasing level, people dealing with serious illnesses. And you kind of want to know when you leave your job, it'll be there when you get back. Mm-hmm. And with the problems we have in our economy there, people are afraid to even take leave because they want to make sure that they won't have job security.
Kevin, this also speaks to a regression that we are seeing slowly chipping away at the average everyday worker. When you look at this, when you look at the idea that corporations are now pulling back promised insurance coverage and the like, many people, quite frankly, feel totally impotent.
Yeah, it concerns me, because what I'm hearing now is the suggestion that serious illness should be classified as anything that requires you to take off 10 days or more. I mean, you know, we're talking about folks who may have someone who is ill in a very serious way for a couple of days, and then you may lose your job for that, which I think is completely unfair. And so I think there definitely needs to be a process where the public or working folks in this country, middle class and working class folks, can say, we want to help define what a serious illness is and why we need to take off this amount of time and set the time limit for it. Because I think this is jeopardizing really workers' rights at the end of the day and the ability to leave their jobs and have that job when they come back because of an illness.
Let's turn our attention now to Muhlenberg, PA. And this is the age-old question of whether or not we should ban certain types of books in schools. The book looked at right now is called The Buffalo Tree. It's a novel set in a juvenile detention center and narrated by a tough 12-year-old boy incarcerated there. One of the scenes, and one that has raised the ire of many, is a communal shower scene in the book where another adolescent boy is sexually aroused. When told about this at a particular or at a meeting, one 16-year-old student stood up at the local high school, addressed the assembly and board members gathered there, and said, "How would you feel if your son or daughter had to read this?" She went on and read the excerpt from the book that she was bothered by. There are others who suggest that this kind of book, this more realistic book, is what's needed today, particularly with the outset of the rising tide of suicide among teens, the confusion that many of them see today. And so we see the traditional split between conservatives and liberals here, Kevin, when you talk about just banning books in America, period.
I just think this is incredible, given that we live in a country over the last 10 years. You've seen a rise, as you said, in teen violence. We've seen the whole crisis of the Catholic Church with the alleged molestation of young people, of children. And so it's not like young people in this country are immune to any of these kind of stories. And I just think it really speaks to the fact that we are in a very reactionary time, as we were 20 years ago with the Reagan era. You know, I think the re-election of Bush has really kind of empowered and emboldened conservatives to think that they can just censor free speech across the board. And I just totally disagree with that as a writer, as an author.
George Curry, when you hear this, does it harken back to a time? I don't want to raise the McCarthy era up here, but a number of people say, to a great degree, they're afraid that we're tiptoeing back to that kind of situation.
Well, we've always had book protests, whether it's over of Mice and Men or Catching a Rye. What is interesting is that the number of banned books are up about 100 over last year. I think it's now at about 547. And what the head of the American Library Association said, that you tend to see that when there's an increase in power among conservatives. They said that when Ronald Reagan came to power, I think the challenges were up to 900 or 1,000 a year. And then when Bush came in, and you see that when a conservative there, it's not anything against conservatives, that the so-called family value issues rise to the forefront, and you get more discussion and more action along this line.
I don't see, it doesn't, there may be more discussion, more reaction. I don't see this as something to be alarmed about. As George says, this is something that's been on the table for well over 100 years, the whole issue of banning books. But I think we have to remember in many ways that we're behind our young people today. Young people talk about this stuff among themselves. This stuff is all over the media. Just turn on MTV or BET or turn on the radio. The issue of sexuality and how people, young people express their sexuality is something that is up front and center with them. And I think it is important for us to accept that and to be comfortable about speaking about it openly, especially in the classroom. Because when you don't, when you suppress these kinds of conversations about sexuality, that's what leads to the issues that were raised earlier about teen suicide and issues of sexuality and young people who are gay and lesbian not being afraid to come out because they can't even talk about heterosexual activity. How are we going to ever talk about homosexual activity?
But is there this fine line, this fair line, if you will, of something being too titillating for a particular group of young people and something that's realistic and gets them to talk about things they need to know about, particularly current day?
What's the definition of too titillating? I think
exactly.
is what I've heard described in this book is something that's real. These kids go into the showers and they have these experiences. And again, you don't want to suppress the conversation or just to suppress the events. You want to talk about them openly.
Well, that's always the age-old question, Kevin Powell. Who decides what is and isn't?
Well, I think that they need to listen to the young people. I think Ms. Washington hit it on the head. The young people today are exposed to so much more than I was exposed to 20 years ago when I was 12, 13 years old. And I'm telling you, you cannot continue to say this is what they can read, this is what they can watch. They will find it in their own ways. And as she said, it can lead to some very destructive behavioral patterns if we don't bring this stuff to the table.
And George Curry, what if, as in this case, a youngster says that this is what I'm reading and I'm offended by it, if enough of them bring this to bear?
Well, you're going to have a lot of them saying that, but you're going to have the other saying this is nothing new and probably wonder what the big fuss is all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
by
right.
The time kids get in 11th grade, they pretty much heard this. And we're talking about a juvenile detention facility. This is not unrealistic at all.
All right, this is far too deep for me because my baby's going into middle school next year. And I just can't deal with it, George Curry. I got to move on.
Keep out of the detention centers.
Listen, we should note that we did contact the high school there and talk to the principal. And though it was reported that the book was banned the following morning, they said that they are still looking at this situation and no real hard, fast rule has been made yet. All right, 25 years of CNN, Ted Turner's baby, his brainchild, and of course so many people taking a look at that anniversary. Yesterday was the official anniversary, but here's what's interesting. CNN, this is Ted Turner speaking, should cover international news and the environment, not the, quote, pervert of the day, end quote. And this was Ted Turner's way of suggesting that news really has trivialized itself, and it's not dealing with the important issues of the day, Laura, and is now chasing J-Lo or Britney Spears' baby. Is it the dog wagging the tail or the tail wagging the dog? What if, as many people will suggest to you based on ratings, people don't care about the environment, they don't care about the war, they do care about whether Britney's pregnant or, you know, whether Brad and Jen or Brad and what's the alias girl's name, the Angel, one he's going out with.
Angel. I don't know. Now, I don't follow that stuff. You know.
So the point is, that's the question, though.
Yeah. That is the question. The question is whether or not we should give people what they say they want, you know, in terms of what the ratings show, or should we give them what they need? I think we have to do both. Even Ted Turner himself acknowledged that when he was heading CNN, it was O.J. Simpson all day, all the time. And that debate raged at that time. You know, why are we focused so much on the O.J. Simpson trial? They're talking about the Michael Jackson trial the same way now. The answer was because people wanted it, because people were glued to their TVs. That doesn't mean you can't give them international reporting. It doesn't mean you can't do business reporting, economics reporting. But this is a part of the daily fare.
But George Curry, it's a money-making business, and I don't want to do that if I'm afraid that I will hear those clickers hitting the minute the rainforest comes on.
Well, if he said they've switched to a pervert of the day, and they switched from being number one to number two, so maybe they need to go back to it because Fox is taking the lead over them. I think the larger point he's making here is that we're talking about trivialization of the news, and I think he has a valid point. When you look at the Pew study and all these other kind of reports that come out, there has been a shift in the kinds of stories that are being reported now. And international news is certainly among those that get dropped further down the line. So I think the point earlier made is correct. I mean, you do have to give people not only what they need, but what they want, but also what they need, because
Kevin
they
Powell,
need to have this information.
What of those who will say that George Curry has the romantic notion of news and he just wants to hearken back and go back to the days of Edward R. Murrow and the Burberry coat, you know, in the mist and rain of London? We're not going to see that anymore.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Mr. Curry is one of the reasons why I ended up being a journalist. I came in wanting to be a news journalist because I thought the way news was presented was interesting, you know, up until probably the late 1980s, as you know. And now I see when I talk to younger people who have even an interest in getting in the media, everyone wants to be a celebrity journalist because the news has been so tilted towards celebrity sensationalism. As you said, Brad and Jen, Brad and Angelina, Michael Jackson, etc. And I think Ted Turner's point is correct. I think, though, one of the things, the challenges for us in the media is particularly television, since it's what we all watch more than anything else, is like, how do you make the news interesting? How do you make the rainforest interesting? How do you make what's going on in the Sudan interesting? And I think we've got to figure out a way to do it. And whether we like it or not, Fox News Channel is number one because of people like the gentleman whose name I'm forgetting.
Bill O'Reilly.
Thank you. You know, because there's a certain kind of entertainment value. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he actually came out of an entertainment-type show background before he got to Fox News Channel.
And Laura,
I agree with Kevin Powell, but I also think not only do you have to make it interesting, you have to make it relevant.
Yes,
I think the problem with much of the news today is it doesn't touch me, it doesn't touch the community, it doesn't reflect the community, certainly, and we've seen plenty of studies on that. It doesn't talk to people where they are, the bread and butter issues.
Right.
Laura, you're right, and the whole key is to humanize this. No, you know, you can't talk about an environment as an abstract. You have to say this is how it's going to impact your life, and then I think people react to that.
Yet here's the reality, and I've said this on many occasions. If I sit down, as I have in the past, and do an interview with the sitting president of the United States, particularly if it's an issue of import, let's say to the African-American community, immediately after the riots, I had the opportunity to go to the White House and talk to George Bush. You look at the numbers there and who tuned in for that interview.
Right.
They pale in comparison to when I talked to Mary J. Blige or Whitney Houston or Sade.
But that's the
point.
That
is a reality.
that's a reality, but the point is that's not good enough. You just can't go out and hold your finger to the wind and say whatever people want, that's what we're going to give them, and that's all we're going to give them. Yes, right. Give them some of that, but you still have an obligation to give them the other part as well.
And you don't see that, as some people will say, as being too paternal.
No, I said both, Ed. I said both.
Well, no, I know what you said.
I think it's being responsible. And that's what Mr. Curry is suggesting. We've got to be responsible as journalists in the media. We've got to say, here's your entertainment, but we've got to tell you what's going on in the world as well, because there's got to be some balance here. Because part of the problem, when we talk about the decrease in people being interested in the voting process over the last several elections, part of it is because everything is focused on entertainment. I mean, we always say more people vote for American Idol than they do in a presidential election.
Isn't the reality here... the adage that we heard from the Clinton campaign, it's the economy, stupid. And the reality now that television news, more than any other time in its history, has become part of the money-making vehicle of the networks.
Well, television news is also losing ground, in particular network television, traditional network television, is losing ground to cable and to entertainment programming because, again, it's not reaching people and not making itself relevant. So I think that television news has to look at itself very carefully and not try to mimic entertainment, because it can't win that game.
I mean, she's so right, because look how how Ted Koppel's being treated. I mean, people barely yawn when it was, and God bless him and God help him, when Peter Jennings announced that he had his medical problem. But 25 years ago, if someone left one of the big networks like that, you know, that was a big deal. Now it's kind of like, well, whatever. You know, what's happening in entertainment?
Right. In part, there's an increased competition. The networks had no competition before. You had to watch them or you watch nobody.
That's
now,
right.
You, as Laura said, you got the internet, you got cable TV, and people have alternatives.
All right. Kevin Powell, Laura Washington, George Curry, I thank you all for a very spirited debate and conversation. And George, you too are a guiding force in my career in trying to be a better journalist.
That's right.
I salute you.
I got more work to do, too.
All right, guys. Thanks.